Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Jen, who is here to speak with us about her experience of participating in one-day workshops in her very own geographic area. Welcome, Jen.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. So we just happen to have such an event coming up in your very area.
That's right.
We'll be in the New York area a week from Saturday, I believe it is, January 31st. Mm-hmm. And since you've participated in these sorts of events in the past, we thought you'd be a great person to speak about your experience of it, especially because you have a very well-established practice, and yet you're on the other side of the country from the monastery. So maybe to just get your experience of what it is that a day like this adds to your practice.
Sure, yeah. Well, I think my first experiences of practice were actually here on the East Coast at a retreat center here, and I actually worked a retreat center for many years as well. So I've been to a lot of retreats, but my first experience of retreats with this Sangha was feeling like I'd come home to the family that I never quite had.
Know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. And then especially coming to the monastery where the privileged environment is, you know, sort of the keystone of it all, I felt like it took me a couple of retreats to identify exactly what it was that was so special about it, about the practice. And, for me it wound up being that there is a point of view that this practice takes that there is nothing wrong with anything. And when you have that view, it was just a completely different experience for me to be around people that thought there was nothing wrong with me, there was nothing wrong with the weather, there was nothing wrong with anything.
Yeah, completely unconditionally, so that anything that comes down the pike, there's no, we can't handle this, because everything is within that foundation, if you will, that there's nothing wrong. So anything that comes along is, okay, well, this is what we'll practice with now.
Exactly. Yeah, so it just felt like this was the thing I'd been looking for my whole life, and I hadn't had a sort of touchstone for that experience, and that practice gave me that. So I feel like these retreats that are close to home, because they can only make it to the monastery so often, the retreats close to home give me at least a moment, a day, a few hours worth of being with people that's the frame of reference.
Yeah, that's such a good point, that it's not like there's a lack of activities in everyone's hometown that are inspiring and interesting and all of those things, and all good ways to participate in one's life, but that the unique qualities that I hear you talking about that this practice brings for people who really resonate with that and really appreciate that in their lives, it's such a great gift to have that come to you instead of always having, you needing to get on an airplane to get to it.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and I was thinking too before the call about how, there's something that is kind of undefinable about the experience of being together, even though we don't talk to each other.
Yeah.
There's a, clearly like this phone call and open air and email classes and other way that the Sangha is together is great, and it's not the same as being together in person.
Yeah. You know what just dropped in when you said that, Jen, was we don't talk to each other, but we talk with each other.
Yeah.
Because a workshop is such an amazing experience, at least for me, both in facilitating and participating in them, there isn't anything that anyone says in the workshop that I can't go to my direct experience of what they're saying.
Absolutely.
And especially the
Jen?
Parts.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
This is Michael. You're a little quiet, Jen. I'm sorry. Jen DeMonk is a little quiet.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Is this any better, Michael? I'll
yes,
do my shouting thing.
Great. Yep.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you for that heads up.
Sure.
So the best parts are when someone says something that completely resonates, and I never would have thought to say it.
Mm-hmm.
I never would have put it that way. I hadn't quite seen it that way. I hadn't put those two things together, and it's just such a fabulous Sangha experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And there's also a sense of, you know, like I said earlier, it really feels like family to me. So I've over the years now have gotten just the inspiration that I get from other people's practice, you know, to go to a retreat and be live with the person who was my first reflective listening buddy 6 years ago, and to sort of see the transformation that's happened in my Sangha brothers and sisters is like, wow, okay, yep, this is what we're doing together.
Yeah. And you know what's so fun about that, Jen, is that we get to see it in each other. And then when we follow the projection back, we realize that's a mirror of the transformation that we're seeing in ourselves.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The other thing I was...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the other thing I experienced the last time we had a retreat in New York City was, leaving the facility to go get lunch at lunchtime was a really interesting experience, sort of being in this bubble of the workshop experience and then going out and maintaining the privileged environment while going to the, you know, the grocery store around the corner was just a fascinating exercise.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. And my experience of that is that it's as if, it's what we always say, everything's exactly the same, but my experience of it is completely different.
Yes.
And what I think what's so unique about having a practice opportunity, and it's actually unique to a one-day workshop now that you say that, because a retreat coming to your area, as you say, is really is fabulous because you don't have to travel so far and all those things. But a one-day workshop is neat in that it kind of you're still in your own environment in the sense of, as you say, you go out for lunch and you go to the store and you buy your whatever. And that everyday interaction, meeting the place of practice, I think reminds us that, oh, right, it's possible to be in this way all the time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then to be able to come right back into the group gathered together and, so that little slice of being out there in the quote-unquote real world, standing in really sharp contrast and just really being able to experience it in a way that I don't because I'm just moving on to the next thing with a lot of distraction in it and then it just sort of gets lost in the shuffle. This allows for, a little bit more time for reflection about what's going on.
Yeah. And I really appreciate the thing you were saying a little bit earlier, too, about that, you know, there are so many ways we can practice from afar these days, which is fabulous. I mean, stop, drop, and text, and reflective listening buddies, and guidance days, and email classes. So many ways we can plug in, even if you're not close to the monastery. And your description of being with people in person, I think it's really, it doesn't take the place, I suppose, is what I'm saying, of all of those other opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, they all work together, obviously, and there's just something special about being live with each other that, it's like they'll do studies, right, where you can see a picture of a tree and it changes your body, like you'll start to relax, but not to the same degree as if you're actually out sitting in nature.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
very good analogy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's kind of the same. It's like, you know, I can be on a call and it can be great, and then being in person, it's like being on a call only 10 times better or something.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, it's one of those experiences where it really takes all of us. You know,
there
can be sort of that, maybe not, I don't want to, I remember actually, that just reminded me that last year at the workshop, I spoke with someone who had come, you know, a decent distance. They didn't live right around the corner from New York City, and had come and just felt, you know, had the voice saying, oh gosh, for one day, and just so grateful at the end of the day that they had decided to do that, and the great gift that it had been to them. And in my projection, the great gift that they had offered to each of us who got to be there and participate, because every person who comes is adding something to the whole.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a good point. It's easy to get talked out of it because if it's a little bit of a distance away, because it is only a day, or you know, part of a day even. And so it can be kind of easy to not want to drive too far to experience that. But I recommend you don't listen to that voice.
Me too. In fact, we just had the experience on whatever the video workshop day was.
Sunday. Yeah.
So we at the monastery packed up our cars and headed out far before you know, daylight.
Mm-hmm.
Went down, participated in that video workshop, and drove home, got home well after dark, completely lit up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so much fun.
Yeah. The energy infusion that you get will far outweigh any energy use that you use to get there.
Yeah. In fact, that can be part of the workshop, especially now with recording and listening. It's like, wow.
That's right.
Listening the whole way in and recording like crazy the whole way home.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jen, so much for being with us this afternoon.
You're welcome, and I'll see you next weekend.
Excellent. Can't wait.
Yeah. Great.
All right. Take good care. Good night.
You too. Good night.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Jen. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. That was pretty fun.
Yes, it was. Uh-huh. And I'm wondering if it's only 2 days since that amazing workshop that we had.
I know. It was fun, wasn't it? I had fun. I hope other people had fun. We had fun.
Based on the laughter, it seemed like everybody was having fun.
Yeah, it seemed like everybody was having fun. You know, speaking of everybody and like that and having fun, when Jen and Jen were just talking, and they were talking about being there in person and everybody making a difference, and I had this image of a recipe. You know, you've got a recipe that you're gonna fix, and and how many ingredients would you be able to leave out before you didn't wind up with the dish you thought you were going to have?
Yes.
You know, so, well, we can leave the salt out. Oh, yeah, and, you know, we probably don't need the flour.
Yes.
You know, if you go down the list and realize that after a while you'd come up with something that was not nearly the quality that it would have had if you'd had all the ingredients. And that's what it's like with Sangha. You know, except this is a dish that, you know, you can just keep adding ingredients and it just gets better and better and better.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking that the privileged environment is the key ingredient in all that.
You know, it is, Michael. I was inspired about that just recently, and wanted to talk to Ashwini about you know, how we might want to do something maybe on Open Air about the privileged environment or something like that, because it is true that we'll have events like that, and there's a certain casual element to it. You know, people are just around together, and we're not sitting facing a white wall. In fact, with something like that, you know, we're moving furniture and setting up all kinds of equipment, and there's the this and the that, and it's easy to lose focus and forget about the privileged environment, and that just came up for me recently, where a couple of people met under different circumstances, and but they're both in the Sangha, and then it starts in, you know, where, oh, and what do you do, and oh, you, and this and that, and oh, maybe we could, and the privileged environment starts to slip, and I just takes me right back to that. If we lose the privileged environment, we lose practice, because it is really true that it is the thing that makes this practice different from all other practices. And there are many, 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 many wonderful practices that people can do. But if ego has a chance to get its foot in the door and start talking to people, then people start talking to people and often about people and about things, and pretty soon there are divisions and factions and unhappiness and gossiping and that sort of thing, and the Sangha will fall apart. And we don't want that to happen to our Sangha.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So learning how to be together, learning how to be casual, how to be friendly, how to be sociable without being social, without being personal, without being personality. Yeah. Yeah. It's quite a practice, what would we say, a skill, an accomplishment?
Yes.
Yes.
And I think it comes with time and a lot of retreats and workshops and practice experiences and discussion calls and all that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes how it happens for people is that they have an experience of not privileged environment. You know, where they're with Sangha and somebody says something to them out of the blue, you know, or just walks up and talks to them in a silent environment. And it's so shocking, so startling, that the importance of the value of privileged environment becomes really clear. But we, you know, we'd rather people didn't have those kinds of shocks and that we would just all be very mindful of what is that unique thing about this practice that has drawn us all to it.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I have some announcements here.
Oh, I was going to say, did we have anything else we were supposed to be doing tonight, Michael, or are we just chatting along here? All right. Announcements.
Yes. Enjoy the support and connection of meditating with Sangha using virtual meditation groups. These are conference call meditation sessions that include a 30-minute set and a reading from one of your books, Sherry.
All right.
And yes. And for current group times and to give us input on when you would like to meditate, please visit livingcompassion.org/virtual-meditation-groups. Again, that's livingcompassion.org/virtual-meditation-groups.
All right. That's really important. So if a person says, you know, I live in Kentucky and that's in the this time zone and I would love to meditate first thing in the morning, so that would be 7 a.m. for me, and, you know, and then send that in, and we'll see if we can make that happen.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So responsive and kind.
Mm.
And as we've been hearing about, plan your year of support by registering for our year-long retreat, Training to Live in This Here Now. Enjoy connection through workshops and intensives all year long.
New, fun, and exciting practices.
Yes.
Can't wait. You know, it seems, I get to this place with practice all the time. It's like, hasn't somebody come up with everything? I mean, really, is there another way to do this? I can't imagine what it is. And then somebody says, oh, well, you know what we could do is, and it's a brilliant idea. And we all say, yes, let's do that. And we have a couple of those this year that I'm really excited about.
Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And as Jen and Jen were just talking about, connect with East Coast Sangha at our January 31st workshop in New York. It's entitled Beginning a Year of Conscious Compassionate Awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And all this
always a
and
good
more. Go ahead.
Always a good way to start a year.
Yes, with practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And visit livingcompassion.org/schedule for more information on these and other events. And a couple of reminders. to make guest show. To indicate your desire to talk with Sherry today, press star 6 and then 1. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get started.
Here we go.
Here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Diane calling from Santa Rosa.
Well, hello. How are you?
I'm great. I'm very surprised that I'm getting on. So,
because we just spoke on Sunday, didn't we?
Exactly. We just spoke on Sunday, and I just want to, you know, I was listening to Jen and Dan, and just want to emphasize what they were saying too, that there's nothing like being there in person. So I just feel really grateful that I got to be there. And you know, it's kind of it's kind of like the difference between talking to someone on Skype versus talking to them, you know, in front of them
across
table. Yeah, across the table. It's great. So you know, I'm practicing with staying in the moment in this here now. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't have anything specific to talk about, but I just I think that the one thing I'd like to say is how amazing it has been to put myself in the queue every week, and the kind of workshop that happens in every time Michael says, next person you're, you know, just okay. And to see what condition, you know, to see, it's so good to learn that when these sensations are happening in the body of the heart beating and the kind of, or even maybe the experience of what is labeled relief after I'm not on the air, is really actually something that I'm learning as a cue to that. I don't know how to explain it really, but that when I'm experiencing these sensations, it's really maybe very important to talk and to, or to show up or to do whatever conditioning is saying. Well, that would be really a relief if you didn't get on the air right now.
Yes. That if it weren't good for you, there wouldn't be any resistance.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know. I remember hearing several people say that recently. That it has been good to put themselves in the queue, and I just want to say it really to anybody who might be out there afraid of putting themselves in the queue, that it's really an amazing practice
mm-hmm.
and a supportive practice.
And you know, the thing, among other things, I mean, there might be many, many things, but one of the things that ego so doesn't want a person to get is that it's going to be just fine.
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be just fine. Yeah, your heart will pound and maybe your voice will shake a little, and you'll survive, and nobody will laugh at you or make fun of you or discount you or lose respect for you because these are things that happen to all of us, and and in this environment, and I'm not saying this is the only one, but this is certainly one, people are accepted exactly as we are.
Yes.
And that's the thing ego doesn't want us to know.
That's the thing that ego doesn't want us to know ever. Yes.
Ever. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Because as soon as we know it's all right, everything is okay, there really is nothing wrong, why would we want to be in relationship with a voice in the head that is constantly trying to frighten us and control us and make us believe that we're in danger and that we need to do what it's saying in order to be okay. If we know we're okay, then we're freed up to do anything.
Yes, exactly. We're freed up to do anything. And if we get beat up after participating, it's just ego projecting its own delusions onto the being. And it's really good to remember that, because the beating often happens.
Yes. And in remembering that, we know we don't have to take the beating.
Right, exactly.
So, right? So when we, yeah. So, you know, if you're talking to somebody and they are upset about something, and they're upset about you, say, and they're going on and on and on. Now, if you don't understand projection, it can be a rugged situation, right? Mm-hmm. Because we believe that what they're saying is true, or it might be, and we need to feel bad. We need to defend ourselves. We need to do something, right? Because because there's this belief that there's some veracity in what they're saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when we understand projection, then we know, okay, that's that's that person's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So in this instance, what we know is that's ego's stuff that's being projected onto me. Okay, so
yes.
Ego is upset about that. Ego doesn't like that. Ego, and so we can, in the same way we would do with another human being, we can just send those projections right back to ego and say, okay, well, ego is this and ego is that, and ego does this and says that and whatever. But it doesn't have anything to do with me.
Yes.
Okay, so,
yes,
yeah. So then what I can do is the next step. So say it's not ego. Or say it is ego, doesn't matter, ego, real person, then I'm free to look and see what I've got going about all of that.
Uh-huh. Say that again, I missed one word. I got to see what?
I get to see what I have going on about what ego has just projected onto me, or that person has just projected onto me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
yes.
So I had a friend in the monastery where I trained who, in that kind of situation, would just nod and smile and say, "Oh, well, thank you. I'll look and see what is any of what that has to do with me. What any of that has to do with me."
Uh-huh.
Right? And so
yes.
It's just left there in the hands of the person it really belongs to. And yet, as people practicing awareness, We want to take all information to see, well, what do I have going about that?
Uh-huh, that's right.
Yeah? Yeah.
Yes, yes, especially if you get the same message from a lot of people, you start thinking, well, maybe there is something there to look at.
Exactly,
right?
So. Either that, or I tend to pick the same kind of people to hang out with.
That's true. Yes, yes.
Yeah, so it could be a little bit of both, but we do want to look. Right? We want to realize it's their projection, and it could be helpful to us to see something in that for us.
Yes, right.
So somebody could project something onto me that they find extremely upsetting.
Uh-huh.
Right? You are XYZ, and I really don't like it that you're XYZ. So I see that you really don't like XYZ. And you believe that I am XYZ, and that's really troubling to you. So I look at it, and I go, XYZ, XYZ, XYZ. Well, I don't mind XYZ. It's not a problem for me.
Uh-huh.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Just the fact that somebody accuses us of something doesn't mean it's even something that we're going to feel bad about or have a concern about. Even when we recognize that, yeah, that goes on with me.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. And then it seems like also what has been really comforting also has been to know that what gets exposed, if anything, in those conversations is ego. And
precisely.
And, right. Yeah.
Ego in you right? You're now the accuser, okay? Ego in you, ego in me, right? So we can get into a thing where, well, you're XYZ. And I say, well, you're ABC. And where does that really lead us, right?
Yes, no, there's no one left, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And going back to Sunday, when you brought up what you brought up about the events recently that happened in Paris, that's it, right? This is the same conversation, actually. We're having the same conversation where something gets on one side of something, something gets on the other side of something,
Yes.
And then they're ready to go to war over it, right? They're ready,
yes,
literally, to kill over it.
Yes.
So the
yes.
same process happens inside us when ego is upset by something we're doing or saying and decides to control us by being violent to us in the form of, you know, calling us names or trying to make us feel bad or whatever it is. It's the same process. It's how that bigger process happens.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's it's amazing. It makes you want to really proselytize.
Yeah, well, it really does make us want to see it all at its most basic level, so that so it has less and less chance to fool us in ways that can ultimately either make us harmful or allow us to be harmful.
Yes,
to ourselves or anyone.
Yeah, I actually, you know, as I heard you speak, I just realized proselytizing would be just another expression of the projection.
Yes.
Outside,
yes.
You know, instead
That's
of,
right.
yeah, right.
Another
yeah.
another way to separate.
Yes, another way to separate. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you. I feel so excited to be part of all this. It's really, really fun and exciting and freeing. So
yeah, all of that. You. And we've got a whole another year to practice all this together. I know. We're so lucky.
That's amazing. Yes.
Right.
Oh, and I just one last thing before I go. I just wanted to say I've been listening to very old archives, and it's really wonderful. And I highly recommend to start from the very beginning. It's really, really fun. So thank you to you and Michael. It's really amazing how long it's. It feels like today, you know, I lose track of when what I'm listening is from when. It just is as fresh now as I'm sure it was back then.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's good to hear. That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Dionne. And I just went right back there myself, Sherry, to those days.
I know. We were so young. Weren't we? We were so young.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we have another call.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry and Michael. This is Jeff in North Carolina.
Well, hello, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. And
good.
Yeah, thank you. I don't think we can say it enough just how great it is to be part of this practice and this sangha. And so I just wanted to begin with that. So,
thank
very
you.
Grateful.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. We locked onto a good deal, didn't we?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Jeff, I know you know this story because you've been around for a very, very long time, but when I just said that in response to what you said, it took me back to truly being very, very young And having read my first book on Zen and deciding that this woman who was Japanese that I knew sort of a little bit, I had been introduced to, surely she must know about this, and that I would track her down and find out how I would study Zen. And then finding out that she was actually raised in the Central Valley of California and knew less about Japan than I did at that point. And but she had taken a class at the local college on comparative religion, and she happened to know that there was a Zen monastery nearby. And that, you know, that just that that little encounter led to my introduction to this, practice and this way of being in Sangha. And how blessed, how fortunate, how grateful.
And just amazing to how life puts those kinds of things together.
Yes.
Just extraordinary.
Perfect timing.
Yeah.
Yep, perfect timing. Mm-hmm.
And in ways that we would never even come close to predicting.
No, couldn't even imagine. And it, and only looking back, realize the magnitude of.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
How easy it would have been for me to decide, oh, I don't know her, I can't ask her, something like that. And boom, you know, another, headed off in another path. But of course, I suspect that that wasn't going to happen because it didn't happen, for which I'm grateful.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I wanted to talk to you tonight. I've talked with you a few times about what's been going on with my physical health and practice around that. And that's what I wanted to talk about tonight again. Briefly, there have been some changes since I spoke to you about it last. I had had some seeming tendon stuff in, you know, various places in the body and for some, you know, some period of time. And then beginning in late October, started to have some seeming nerve stuff going on in my hands and a little bit wrists and forearms, but mostly my hands. You know, numbness, tingling, kind of a shocking pain and stuff like that. And then in early December, that kind of thing started in my feet as well. And then in early this month, I started to, just in one 24-hour period, it started to have some loss of coordination in my fingers and toes. You know, with that, you know, actually, you know, talking to you tonight, I feel like I'm in a good place in terms of being with that. And, you know, it's just, you know, one of those things about, you know, how, again, being very grateful for practice, especially when the loss of coordination started just a couple weeks ago, you know, it. I'm not saying there's huge loss of coordination at this point, at least. But still, you know, immediately, just the fear came in, and I didn't sleep all that much that night, and just these sensations of fear would be coming up in my chest, and I was able to be with myself, you know, as that was happening, and just come in with those reassurances, and I had my you know, my earbuds in all night, and you know, with recordings I'd made before, you know, very loving things and being present in the body and all that sort of thing, and you know, just to really be able to. Anyway, and I'm not saying that I haven't gone into that fear at times, and you know, not that it doesn't talk to me and not that I don't get identified with it, but I really haven't gone into, you know, really dark places with it. And mm-hmm. and I've quickly been able to come back by questioning those thoughts, you know, and I'm talking to my coach about it every week. And, you know, so I wanted to kind of start off
Jeff,
with that part of it.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Just to catch me up. So
yeah.
Nobody has been able to diagnose this for you. Nobody's been able to put a label on it.
Yeah, I guess I should also say I went and I had already scheduled before the loss of coordination stuff started happening. I'd already scheduled an EMG and a nerve conduction test, which are peripheral nerve tests, and that happened a couple days later. And they were completely normal. I'd had those tests also 3 years ago, and the doctor said there was no significant difference between the two of them. I went mm-hmm. to a neurologist last week, and he did a physical kind of what he called a central nervous exam, just kind of, you know, by, you know, follow my hand and, you know, walk and let me put this on your toe and whatever. And that was normal, except for, you know, I had a little bit of trouble with balance on and putting, you know, at one point, and then he scheduled me for MRIs this week, so I'm going on Thursday for a couple of MRIs. But so far, right, there's been no diagnosis. I've had tons of blood work, and, you know, for most all of it is normal, and anything that's not is very minor, and so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Yeah. So that's not all that comforting, is it?
It's mixed. It could be either way, you know. I mean, because, I mean, depending upon what it would be, I mean, it could be something that we couldn't do much about, and that would not be exciting either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't known what to do about that except, you know, show up for the next thing that seems there to do, you know, and advocate for myself to, like, this neurologist appointment. It wasn't going to happen that early, but I, you know, once it started to go to the, you know, the lack of coordination thing, I called up and said, hey, can we get in any earlier, and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm pursuing other avenues. You know, I'm going to go see a nutritionist tomorrow night, and, we'll consider acupuncture or, you know, various other things, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, which is all good, isn't it? And it is the perfect spiritual place in that it truly is. There's no choice to be anywhere but I don't know.
Mm, right.
Right, right. And so when those voices kick in like that, the thing that you know is they don't know.
Right.
Right? So it's so obvious that they're just throwing fear bombs at you. Fear grenades, and that's really all that's going on. It's just a campaign to frighten you as much as possible and create as much suffering as possible. So to be able to take care of the human being as that's going on is really powerful because we don't know what it is now. It could be nothing, right? It could be something that's completely innocuous and, you know, it turns around. And that's the end of it. But someday it will be something big because that's just how life is, right? And so
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's not now, but we're all gonna face something at some point. And again, as I'm fond of saying, unless we get hit by a truck. And so to have that practice of being with oneself so that those fear voices don't control our life experience is just it's a blessing. It's not a good time, but it is a blessing.
What was the one word? It's not a what?
It's not a good time. It's not fun, but it is a blessing. It's one of those. It's kind of a fitting a sashim that doesn't end for a very, very long period of time. You know, it's not always or ever particularly pleasurable, but it's definitely instructive and illuminating and powerful.
Yeah.
Because you have to be right here. You have to be right here, right? That's what it's requiring you to do. You can't just wander off and forget about it. I mean, you can, but I bet it's for shorter periods of time than you've ever been able to wander off and forget about something, right? Because there's going to be something in your body that's bringing you right back to here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, just it's exactly like you described that. I feel like it's very, very good practice. And going back to something that you said a little bit a while ago, I have to be honest that it has not been not been obvious to me that those voices, and actually it's generally just, you know, that I experience it in sensations, just telling a story that is not, that I'm not hearing in words until I put it into words and then question it, which has been a very powerful thing mm-hmm. for me to do, is to, you know, ask questions. Well, do I know that's true? You know, how do I know that's true? You know, what if that's not true? Or all kinds of things like that. Mm-hmm. That has been tremendous to ask those questions and put what the fear is saying into words, and then ask questions of, you know, do I absolutely know that that's true? Because in, you know, being identified with the, whoever I've been identified with, you know, in those moments when that fear comes up, it's not at all obvious that this is not true. It feels true. It, you know, it makes it sense that all these bad things are going to happen based upon the symptoms. But to question it and go and realize that, as you said, those voices don't know that. They don't know that. Even all the sensations in the body that are saying bad things are going to happen, even if they're not being, you know, said outwardly in voices, you know, though, that's not any information about what's going to happen in the future either.
Right.
So, isn't that
huge? I mean, almost the entire world lives in an unexamined belief that it is possible, in fact, not only to know what the future is going to bring, but to control it.
Mm.
If you're careful enough, if you live small enough, if you don't ever risk anything or really do anything, then you can make sure you're going to be safe. Well, no, actually. All that will happen is you'll live a life, a little tiny life of fear.
Yeah, and the other part of that story for me is that two things: that one, that I would want to control it if I could, and that being able to control it that way makes me the right person. It makes it kind of, it says something about me that makes me who I should be. And not being able to control it, and not being able to, you know, live in a way that looks outwardly successful and, you know, accomplishes all these things and whatever, it somehow makes me less of who I should be, even to be healthy. That, you know, there's this way in which the conditioned story is that those people are better in some way. People who are healthy.
The right people
they've
are
done
healthy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're doing something right. They've figured out how life works, and that's why they're healthy. And or, you know, whatever the story. The story's never exactly the same whenever I investigate it. You know, it always gets changed because it doesn't make any sense.
Don't you love that? So you start it, you start questioning it, you start examining it, and it just begins to morph, right? Because,
right. Well,
that doesn't make any sense. Well, that's silly. That's ridiculous. That's not, okay. Then it's over here. Well, yeah, but, and then it gives you some other variation on it. And that is what we need to be doing in awareness practice, those questions that you were asking, those are the questions. How do you know that? What if that's not true? Mm. What makes you think that? Where does that come from?
Mm.
Why am I believing that? Does that actually lead to the life that I want to be living? What if I didn't do that? What if I didn't believe that? What if I didn't live from that place? Might my life be more the way I'm told my life should be? Because there's a connection, right? I'm told how my life should be and then systematically prevented from doing the things that would give me the life that I should have.
Wow.
Now, Jeff, have I asked you to write in and ask me about my favorite direction with this kind of thing? With what you're up against?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, would you do that? Would you write into the guest master and ask, say that I asked you to write in to get some information that I would like for you to have?
Yes, I absolutely will.
Okay. And in the meantime, stick with it. Because that practice that you're doing is going to serve you well for the rest of your life, whatever happens.
Absolutely.
And you know, Jeff, it's so interesting to me. I look at this all the time with, and it's like what we were talking about with Dion. You know, there's this one thing that seems like a little thing, and then when we kind of take it out, it's everything. You know, it's everything. So egocentric karmic conditioning has people live these tiny, constrained, controlled lives, right? Because that's going to take care of you and make you safe, right? And then we begin to go up against that information, right? And the resistance is outrageous, right? And then we get out there and now we're actually really engaged with life and we're living life. And something happens, and of course what ego would say is, but if you had stayed where you were, this wouldn't have happened to you. But of course it would have. That or its equivalent would have happened because it's the perfect thing for you, me, whoever this person is, to see what's next, to encounter what needs to be transcended to eventually reach liberation. Right? And so that's the whole deal. So I wrote a blog recently and somebody wrote back in and said that they one of the difficulties they had with Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh was apparently some outrageous thing that he said about homosexuals. And I thought, you know, 93 Rolls Royces and outrageous statements about homosexuals. Well, if that gets somebody to a place of understanding, to sympathy, to solidarity with, that they might not have gone to if somebody hadn't said this outrageous thing, can we really say that saying that outrageous thing was a bad thing? Do you see what I mean by that?
I missed kind of that last little bit, I think.
Okay, so the 93 Rolls Royces helps everybody get in touch with what they've got going about money, material, the material world, selfishness, greed, what should happen with everything, how money should be spent, everybody gets in touch with their opinions and beliefs about that when they encounter somebody with 93 Rolls Royces, right? And so somebody encounters, say, racial discrimination or racial discrimination that is taken to the point where something cruel and horrible happens to a person. Yeah. Well, what does it take for us to wake up, to question what we're doing, how we're living? Each one of us, now, this is not a trip to self-hatred, but each one of us, how are we living that the world that we are all participating in together produces something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what we want to do is point at, so in this case, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh must be an awful person because he said this terrible thing about homosexuals. Well, if nice, complacent people suddenly say, wait a minute, that's not okay, that's not all right, then perhaps he has actually given us a gift. Now, of course, what we want to say, especially what ego wants to say is, but I don't need that kind of gift. I know that it's wrong to be prejudiced. I know that it's wrong to say cruel things about people because of their race or religion or sexual orientation. I know that that's wrong. Yes, I know that. But how am I living that difference? Is it enough for me to know that it's wrong and to go on participating in the world in exactly the same way?
Mm-hmm.
These, to me, are important questions for us to ask of ourselves as we practice waking up and ending suffering. It's easy to just know what's right and what's wrong, but it's so much more informative to question.
Mm. Yeah. And Sherry, I'm wondering, are you also making a connection between, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh and the 93 Rolls Royces and the statement about homosexuality and what kind of the catalyst that either of those could be, and then the next thing that happens in our lives, like, you know, could be in my situation, these health things that are
right.
That are saying, wake up. And
that's right.
And
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, not just go further asleep and hate it, be miserable and be a victim, but instead to do what you're doing with it. Well, what if that's not true? Well, how do you know that? Well, you're just voices of fear. I don't want to live my life with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything, every moment of our lives is our best opportunity to wake up and end suffering. Instead of being in a relationship with conditioned voices in our heads, creating an unexamined world that we are actually not living in because we are engaged with voices in our heads, creating an imaginary world in which we can suffer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the big things about this one is just, you know, the only place to live is in the moment, and life has to be now, because the stories being told about the future are not very good, and so I mean, who knows what will actually happen, But it's forcing me to realize, well, that's all made up anyway. You know, the stories that were being told about the future before this were, are made up.
Right.
Anyway.
Yes, but it took this to get you to realize it, right? And for that,
right.
We can be grateful. Yeah, whatever it takes to get us to open our eyes and look around and say, wait a minute here. That's a good thing. Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
All right.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Contact
thank
the guest master, and we'll be in touch. All right. Good night, Jeff.
I will, absolutely. Good night. Good night, Michael.
Good night. Thank you for joining us, Jeff. Sherry, that was a fabulous conversation. Really helpful.
Well, good. I realize that neither of these conversations has held to our 5 minutes, but I just I was so inspired by each of them that I wasn't able to get myself stopped, so.
No problem. We all benefit as a result.
Good. I'm glad.
And we're going to hear from our sponsor now, and then we'll be right back.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have time for one more caller, Sherry.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Sung Ho from Berkeley, California.
Well, hello, Sung Ho. How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to be on again.
Good. It's good to hear from you. What's going on?
Lots of great things. You know, I had read your books years ago, but I came to the monastery for the first time last year in June.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been about 7 months, which is not even that much time, but my life has transformed so much. And, my practice has grown immeasurably in ways that I'd never thought it could grow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and huge credit to the Zen Awareness Coaching Program and everything that Living Compassion does. Like, I really feel like, you know, I get to feel my heart every day in ways that I, you know. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and
It's kind of miraculous, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I definitely plan on going back to the monastery with the retreats this year. And, as I told my coach, I'm slowly recreating my life to be more of the monastery experience. Practice started with, 5 minutes of meditation that, you know, sometimes would happen and would not happen in the morning. And now, I wake up, I recite the daily recollection, I do my meditation, I do my evening meditation, I listen and record, I listen to the archives, work through the workbook, and, you know, it's really being at the monastery, or getting glimpses of that in my daily life, so,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the result is, how did you phrase it, you're with your heart every day?
I am with my heart every day, yeah, and I get to experience joy and freedom and love in ways that, you know, was always available, but, you know, wasn't so much in touch with now. And, you know, even my relationships have transformed in so many ways. Like, it's so easy to feel connected to others.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm just happier. I mean,
yeah. Yes, and you know, the thing about it, and I do know you know this, but there's so much resistance on the part of ego, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Much resistance. Oh, it's going to ruin your life. You're never going to have any fun again. You're going to be weird. Nobody will like you. You're going to be wind up old and alone and probably poor. And then you start practicing, and your life just gets better and better and happier and happier and happier.
Right.
And at a certain point, we look back and think, what was the fuss about?
Mm-hmm.
And we know.
Yeah.
Right? We know what it's about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I definitely still have resistance. It's not like, you know, I'm completely enlightened or anything like that. But I have to say that the trust in practice and everything else is building.
Mm-hmm.
So that I know that even when I have resistance, it doesn't feel so good in that second or so, I know that I trust practice's ability to bring me back to center.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. In fact, I was just writing about that today, about the, you know, the classic, you come home at the end of the day, you're tired, and what do the voices tell you to do? You know, get something that's not good for you to eat and drink, and then sit down and do something that's going to turn your brain into tapioca. And and what do we really need at the end of the day? Well, we need to eat something that's good for us, and to do something that takes care of us, right? That we feel good about, and that, as you say, when that trust grows, that practice can bring us back to center, then the world is just a completely different place.
Yes, yeah.
And we start making good choices for ourselves.
Yeah,
happy
and,
choices
yeah.
for ourselves.
And I think, you know, ego had me believing that all those things were going to be very hard to do. But it's surprising how easeful these changes are made in ways like, you know, if I don't check back with them, like, wow, like, that's so, you know, I think my coach is always reminding me, like, you know, it wasn't that long ago that you were blah, 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 and then now this is, you know, happening. And I'm like, oh, you're right. Like, it happened so quickly.
Yeah.
Like, and I, you know, it was so easy to the point where I didn't even notice it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I love it. It's wonderful.
Yeah, and the recorder is also a great reminder of that, too, of what place that you were in before, not too long ago, and what place you're in now.
Yes.
Right. And so... Yeah,
well, yes, and of course the recorder, again, I was actually talking to myself about this earlier today as I was recording, and periodically on my recordings, I talk about how astounding it is to have a practice like this available to us, that whatever is going on with us, we can talk it through with the recorder, with the mentor. We have this whole archive of our practice, of all of the insights and awarenesses and the places where we stumbled and what we saw as a result of that, and it's all right there for us. It's amazing.
You know, I think I might have a similar recording of that experience. Well, it's good.
Yeah.
Anyways,
yeah, it is good.
As we're approaching 6 o'clock, I was wondering if I could receive a little bit of guidance on something.
I'll do my best.
Okay, great. So I, you know, one of the great things I mentioned about having practice is it's I'm just meeting all these people all the time because I'm present, I think. And, you know, as I'm exploring and investigating and paying attention, sometimes I find myself in a place where, you know, I start to get a little confused. And because the person will be like, oh, you're this way. And I'm like, is that you or is that me? Is this projection or like, you know, am I actually that way? Like, is this something that I'm not paying attention to that somebody else is seeing clearly and showing to me, or is that actually them projecting onto me?
Yes, it is absolutely them. Now, whether or not it's also you, as we were talking about earlier, then you get a chance to see if that's actually you. But for sure, it's them. And that's the hardest thing for people to get, you know, whether they're criticizing you or complimenting you. You know, it may be true for you, but it is certainly true for them because they're the ones seeing it and they're the ones saying it. So there's no doubt about it being true for them.
Right.
For you, you'll have to look and see.
I guess so. I guess, the point is to keep paying attention, and I guess that's what is for me is an opportunity for me to practice. And you know, it was interesting. I went on a date last night, and this person was saying like, "Oh, well, you're giving me all the signals to come closer, but you're resisting me." And I said to this person, I was like, "Well, the thing is like, if I wanted to do something to get closer to you, I would do it. I wouldn't." And he's like, "Well," I mean, then it was interesting because he was somebody who practices, but not through living compassion, and does his own thing. And he was kind of using the language of practice, like, "Why is there so much resistance? Just let go." And I'm like, "Well, I don't really feel like if I wanted to do something, I would do that. And so that was very interesting to me.
Yeah. Yes. And yeah. Good. I applaud your instincts because that just that whole conversation is very important to pay attention to. When people start using practice to manipulate other people, that's something you really want to pay attention to. You know, why is there so much resistance? No. I look at my resistance. I'm not looking at your resistance. Okay, letting go? Okay, I need to worry about my letting go, not your letting go.
I felt like it was being used in a way that, like, to get me to be more sexually involved with it. And I was like, well, to me, like, I didn't even feel like I was in that state. So it just was very confusing he apparently teaches courses on sexuality in tantra. Yeah. So he's like, I'm a master of this stuff. And it was like, well, it's really throwing me off. So that's,
Okay. Well, here's what I would say. The confusion is because you left your intuitive sense about things.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And went up into conditioned mind.
Yes, yes.
Try to figure out what he was saying and what you were feeling and all of that. But your impulse, your intuition was.
Yeah.
And so somebody can be a master of something, but that doesn't mean that you need to be interested in that person's mastery.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Okay, let
the master master the master.
Okay, that's perfect. That's great. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay, thank you. it was great talking to you, and just one last thing is that because I know I was getting on and I was listening about the privileged environment, and it's so funny. The thought that came up for me was that even though I never encounter these people in ways, you know, in normal, what is, you know, maybe seem as normal relationships, even friendships or anything like that, I actually feel a deeper connection to Sangha in ways that, you know, that is, feels like real authentic love to me with these people. And I guess that is part as a result of the privileged environment that, you know, you don't have to be like in some sort of traditional relationship to feel love for people, and I think that's such a profound experience for me.
Yes, it is, and I'll connect it up with what we were just talking about. Okay,
you
also don't wind up in really annoying conversations like that with people. Like the one you had with your date last night.
Yeah,
with Sangha, you don't wind up in those places. We only experience the best of one another. We experience the heart of one another instead of all of the stuff that ego has going on. And, boy, isn't that an argument for the privileged environment.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I just feel so much love in both ways in such deeper ways that I've never felt before. And I feel closer to these people than, you know, some of my closest relationships, and I think that's amazing. So
it is. It is. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, you stay in touch, huh?
I will.
Okay. All right. Good night, Sang Ho.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Sang Ho. That was an awesome conversation and an awesome show, Sherry. Just incredible.
I sure enjoyed it. So yeah. Let's get together again. Say, how about next Tuesday evening?
Okay.
And we'll kind of do the same thing.
Excellent. Great idea.
All right. It's a plan. It's a date.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks,
good
Sherry.
Night.
Good night.